So good morning, everybody. Welcome. This is the 152nd week, Lizzie, of our Turning Towards Life project. And this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space on a Sunday morning in London and in Scotland, in fact, doing exactly what we've been doing every week for 151 previous weeks, which is engaging together in alive and as real as we can conversation that gets born from a source, some writing that somebody has brought us. And if you're new to this, we are so pleased that you're here and hope that you'll very quickly get a sense of what it is that we're doing, the kind of questions that we're asking and the inquiry that we're wanting to be in about life in all of its depth and all of its dimensions. And if you're someone who's been with us for a while, whether you are watching us live this morning in our Facebook group, which is Turning Towards Life, you can just search for it and join it if you wish, or listening on a podcast or watching on YouTube later, welcome also. And it's just such a treat to be here. I feel so glad to be doing this again. I feel glad every week. And thank you, Lizzie, for bringing us this source that you've brought us this time.
So I chose this source because I feel like there's a theme that comes around again and again, I think, in lots of human lives around how we think things should be versus how they really are. And kind of, for me anyway, I feel like I'm always trying to give up the gap between what I think things should be and how they are, and letting things be just like they are and not trying to make them any different. And this poem just really, it felt really sweet and the kind of heartfelt and gentle way of speaking about realness, which I think both you and I, Justin, feel very passionate about with ourselves and with the people around us. So here we go, I'm going to have a read. Do not give me only perfect, for there is beauty in what lacks. The things that are most true are filled with flaws, covered in cracks. So stumble on your sentences, forget the words you need. To those parading as perfection, I must say, pay them no heed. For it is you and your surroundings, it is you and how you feel, you and those you love, which are the things that are most real. And if that means burnt toast and breakdowns, know there's strength in salty tears, which says, I will not let the world tell me there's failure in my fears. So be afraid and be forgetful. Please just be with all of your heart. And if it happens that it's broken, then be yourself with every part.
So I'm going to read it as well, of course. And my invitation to all of us as I read this is, see if you can find the parts of yourself that demand that you be a different way to the way that you are, and see if you can let them soften a little bit so that these words can, I know, so you can soak in them. Do not give me only perfect, for there is beauty in what lacks. The things that are most true are filled with flaws, covered in cracks. So stumble on your sentences, forget the words you need. To those parading as perfection, I must say, pay them no heed. For it is you and your surroundings, it is you and how you feel, you and those you love, which are the things that are most real. And if that means burnt toast and breakdowns, know there is strength in salty tears, which says, I will not let the world tell me there's failure in my fears. So be afraid, be forgetful, Please just be with all your heart, and if it happens that it's broken, then be yourself with every part.
That's lovely. Thank you, Justin. When you read it that time, the thing that got me was, to those parading as perfection, I must say, pay them no heed. And I feel like for me, it points to this, this way that I can imagine that no one else's life is as messy and complex as mine. And that when we see, when I see everyone, it feels like, oh, that they look like they're, you know, for me at the moment, it's like their child doesn't have food all over them and they seem to be just getting on with their lives, and we're in some kind of messy wrangle with banana smashed into our clothes and faces, and I often think, my goodness, am I doing something wrong that we don't look like the Von Trapp family or something, that we haven't kind of all got the, you know, matching items or something. And I feel like that's my kind of superego voice that attaches itself to other people. And this really sweet poem, which in a way feels like a little bit, it speaks to the child part in me as well. There's something about the way it rhymes and the feel of it that's very sweet and kind of unkind and understandable to a parts in me that find this really complex. It speaks to a much simpler part, and just give me permission to go, oh no, don't let whoever you feel is your superego manifesting as other human beings, don't let that be what you pay attention to. Like, let it be there, but let it not dictate the standards or the shoulds of our lives. And I really, really appreciate that, the support for that, and the noticing that that's a tendency that we have around what we should be comes through what other people are like, and what our particular flavor of superego might look like as well.
I felt really playful reading this, and I was really glad for the playfulness of it, because it's at least for me, it's a super serious topic.
Yeah.
And I thought and I felt as you were reading, and then as I was reading, oh, I think some play is necessary here. So, you know, when you said at the beginning, Lizzie, you said, you know, when we don't take the world, when we don't let the world be as it is, like we want the world to be different. And I thought, well, there are lots of ways in which I want the world to be different. And the thing that stops me most contributing to improving the conditions of the world is exactly this thing, which is the standards that I can end up setting. So that line about people who parade as perfect, of course, I know people who do that, but actually most what I felt about it was the part of me that demands that of me. Mm-hmm. And that I've been hanging out with this poem for a couple of days since you posted it, and sort of watching myself through it and noticing, it's been so helpful. Oh, the part of me that gets afraid very often is not afraid of something in the world. It's afraid that I won't live up to the standards which apparently I'm meant to have for being responsible and being good at things and being perfect at stuff. Mm. So if is my inner critic or my superego or some other sort of protector part that's going on, I'm not exactly sure, it's some combination of all of these things, but I could feel as I read the poem, oh, there really is a part of me that holds me to such incredibly high standards. And the moment that part gets a whiff of, I'm not going to reach the standard, what I do, what happens for me is go quiet, hold back, disappear, withdraw. And it's such, so the part of me that would have me hold back has these standards for perfection, togetherness, all of that. And it's, I'm sure lots of other people do as well. And it's so painful, but more than that, living in the orbit of it or believing in it or somehow staying in that dynamic is so interrupting to being in life. And there is something so beautiful when you talked about, you know, smashed banana, my family are all older than mostly than Smashed Banana, but we have our own versions of Smashed Banana. And you know, I suppose the playful part of it for me is hanging out in how messy it is to be a human and seeing if instead of going, oh, but that means I have to hide myself away, or I have to punish, you know, I have to sort of agree with the inner punishment, or I have to, instead of doing that, starting to go, wow, it's really messy. I'm really messy. Let's get on with life anyway. And that's a big shift for a lot of, I mean, it's certainly a big shift for me. And so anyway, in the light of the poem, I've been trying to take myself a lot less seriously. It's been a reminder to sort of revel in how crazy upside down and how little purchase I have on lots of things that I think I ought to have purchase on.
My goodness. It arises for me, Justin, just speaking about like family stuff, that standard that you're speaking, that internal standard that you're speaking of, oh, I'm not living up to the perfection that's demanded of me by myself. I feel like I have that in a kind of relational space, which is someone's upset. I must have done something wrong. And how do I correct myself so that that doesn't happen again? And basically, I've tried that quite a lot and it doesn't seem to be working. It's like, maybe it's something to do with, as you said, accepting the lack of control I have over like who anyone else is, like my behavior. Of course, there's ways I can be more respectful of other people's position or be more considerate or be more empathic or something. Of course, those things are never ending scales of awareness and deepening. But there's also a way I can feel in this conversation that when my first port of call is, I must be the problem. It could be right, but it might just be that that person's having a bad day or they're particularly reactive. And some of it might be my fault, but actually each person is their own world. You know, their world is their world. And so I'm feeling into the kind of differentiation, I suppose, that's necessary, that disentangles me from a kind of my perfectionism interacting with your perfectionism, but that I can accept you in whatever state you're in, your smashed bananas, and I can accept me for my smashed bananas, and whilst knowing that those two things are interacting, it doesn't seem to help that I load my standards of what I should and shouldn't be into that, because it doesn't undo the knot to stay in the same dynamic. Somehow something else is needed, which is maybe an acceptance, maybe a gentling, maybe a resting in the mess that's not directly interacting with the thing that always happens, the pattern that always arises between the two personalities or something.
It's striking me from what you're saying that very often the way that we go with this, at least sounds like this is what you're talking about, certainly what I'm talking about, is that we get into, I am this way, or I did something, I've got a standard for how it should be. And because I didn't reach the standard, now what I'm going to do is tighten up into a little tight ball of effort and shame, and then I'm going to try and act into the world from there. And the intention is very beautiful, right? How could I bring myself more fully? How could I be more creative? How could I be more successful at what I do? How could I take care of another person better? All of that. But I mean, this is the way it feels to me in my own body. And it's so pernicious because I realize I often don't spot it for a while. Oh, I've really tightened up because I'm in this I've fallen short, I have to be better, I have to find a way, and the tighter I get, the more difficult it is, say in relationship with another person, to take really responsive, alive action that will take care of me and take care of them and maybe bring something new in. Like, nothing new ever happens that way. I'm just trying to... So I think that the... is why I've got really sort of caught up with play this morning, but the I think it's the combination of learning to relax that contraction that we get into, learning to see that there's some kind of goodness in our wish to be perfect, but not getting too caught up in the judgment of it, and then wondering and feeling what's the, you know, in any moment there are a million different things we could do and a million different ways we could be. And the tightening up and the contraction very often just, for me, makes it very, very small range of possibilities, which is mostly something like beat myself up, you know. So the accepting that I'm messy, imperfect, barely understand myself, let alone any other, you know, there's so much about myself that I don't get. The acceptance of all of that seems to me, when I can do that, which takes quite a lot of practice in sort of just, in a way, sort of lightening up, actually allows for much more, like if you and I are in some kind of difficulty, what's really cool for, what might I try to say, or what way might I listen with the letting go into my own messy incompleteness and the messy incompleteness of another person. Sort of, it seems paradoxical when we're all tightened up and really trying to get something to happen, that it's very often from there that our biggest creativity comes. And maybe in a way that's the alternative to perfectionism, is a kind of creative response. Like, there's a ton of things I could say or do, or ways I could move here, most of which just aren't frankly aren't apparent to me.
Yeah,
when I'm, and they might help or they might not, and I'm probably learn something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really feel like when you were talking, Justin, I could feel the way that the perniciousness is that it makes us really small in that moment, small in self, but small in view and small in perception and small in openness. And really what's happening is a really, really small something, in a way, by comparison to the size of the world and the way that the stars shine and how the sun warms the earth. Like, whatever's going on is really small. And it's like, I feel like we can kind of get sucked down a hole, a really small hole. But it doesn't mean the rest of whatever else is not the hole doesn't exist in that moment. It's just taken us. It's taken our perception, our interpretation has got really, really tiny. And so it got me thinking about, you know, the first bit of the poem that says, there's beauty in what lacks, and the things that are most true are covered in cracks and filled with flaws. And our flawedness and our cracks, to have ourselves be invited into the fact that there's beauty there. Already I can think of situations now that feel troublesome or difficult. And when I see those things as cracks and flaws in which lies beauty, I'm thinking of all of the kind of imperfection and all of the trickiness. And there's a different kind of life breathed into it. Because yes, I can see the beauty there. If I ask myself, I take a second and breathe, like you're saying, and go, oh, let me take a breath. There is beauty in that. And there is a flawedness that is very particular and is itself a something that is to be appreciated and for us to feel grateful for. And so it feels like I'm, you know, instead of being like a corkscrew that kind of screws into everything that I think needs addressing and kind of having a go and see if I can correct it or bring it to the standards that I think exist in the world for me, of relating, of being anywhere, of going anywhere, of doing anything, of completing things, whatever or not, it feels like I could be seeing through a system of making things smaller and making things exactly what I think they should be, or I could be appreciating many more things at once. Like I know I have the capacity to do that. As humans, we can observe in different ways, and I think this is an invitation to observe in a way that allows us to see and feel very different things. So I guess the challenge to us is like when it all feels like it's going wrong, when it feels really hard, how do we, even if we can't do it in the moment, maybe we can, which would be beautiful, but even if we can't, in reflection, to breathe deeply and to see, or maybe ask the question, you know, what beauty is also here in addition to the difficulty that I'm feeling? And I feel like just in these last moments, I've been saying to myself, okay, so what beauty is there? And there's loads. However difficult it feels, however knotted it feels, there is a hell of a lot of ands in there. It's difficult and it's beautiful. It's difficult and it's creative. It's difficult and it's loving. It's difficult and it's funny. You know, that there are ways of seeing things in all kinds of different forms, I guess. And this poem just seems to ask me to do that, no matter how horrible it feels and how difficult it feels.
Such a beautiful move to bring in and sometimes I catch a glimpse of remembering, even when I'm in the middle of something very difficult and I've got myself all twisted up with everything that this poem is in, that in order to be here, every one of my ancestors had to survive all the way through all the generations back to the first single-celled creatures on the planet without interruption, and that those were only made possible because we happened to be on a planet which had the right heat and light and resources and everything, and that was only possible because there are stars and we happen to orbit a star, and that was it. And that thing of the mess and the pain as well as the joy of being human only arises in the midst of something absolutely extraordinary. So that part you were reminding us of a few minutes ago of what we fight with in a way is so tiny. What we fight within ourselves is so tiny, and I wondered if part of the trap that many of us have found ourselves in is one that got handed to us by our culture, which has not largely majored on the wonder of being a living something and has majored on the perfection of the machine and the system, and we compare ourselves very quickly to machines, or you know, and a machine is just, as long as it's working, it's just doesn't have any of the complexity and mess of a person. And so when we get into, I woke up this way this morning and this poem was so helpful, you know, when we get into some kind of comparison with how I should be and it tightens us and contracts us, that move that you're saying of and, so yes, I'm afraid, and look, I have a body and I can breathe, and look at everything that brought me here, and yes, I'm angry and confused with you because of something you said, and look at how I love you, or look at all the gifts that you've brought to that, and look at what being in relationship with you brings, and I think that I thought when you said it that the move to say and, what it does is it keeps on widening the world beyond our particular kind of contractedness. And that one of the reasons that this was really important, I could see whilst you were speaking, Lizzie, that this is not just about each of us. So our demands that we be perfect in some way also get projected onto other people, and we hold other people to standards that they cannot reach. And that might be people who are in close, family members and friends and colleagues, who we get into crazy demands of and judgments of. But also on a sort of more societal and global scale, it it got me to wondering about how hard it can be for us to really welcome people who are different, who live differently, who have different language or culture or values, or we just don't understand. And then we hold other people because they're different to us to our own standards and get into this inner move of dismissing and judging others much in the same way as we do with ourselves. And that makes it really hard for us to do the very necessary work of seeing one another. So if we don't work with this in ourselves, we make it harder for ourselves to, not working with welcome the and with ourselves, we're making it much harder to do, frankly, what's really called for, which is treating other humans with the same kind of care and love and joy and dignity that we are so often denying ourselves because of this this dynamic.
Yeah, and as you say that, Justin, I can feel all the ways that we reduce other people to something that they're not in this dynamic. And if I'm like this kind of perfectionistic, demanding person with myself and therefore others, it's impossible to let anybody or anything change me. So of course it just feels so born of fear. Like if I let you have your way with me, or you have your this piece of life that you're trying to bring, if I kind of hamper it in some way, I can feel, I'm just saying, I'm frightened of what it might do, or frightened of what it might lead to or something. But it just throws the baby out with the bathwater, as it were. Like it gets rid of what you might be trying to bring me, because I don't like the way it's being brought. So what if I can soften and allow you to be just the way that you are? And who knows what the gifts are if I actually receive them. But this is a huge, big mechanism to keep things out, it seems, as I'm seeing it right now. Like to keep things away, to keep things, everything small, to keep things just as they are. Which ironically is, the complaint is that there's something wrong. So we want something to shift. And this is like barking up the wrong side of the right tree. Like we want something to be different. Otherwise this thing wouldn't be here, but we are so often narrowing and narrowing and narrowing that the thing we're asking for can never be delivered because of how narrow we are. So as you say, like acknowledging the goodness in our perfectionism whilst also opening into what are we really asking for by being that way from ourselves and from others, and opening to whatever that is. Otherwise we're kind of asking for something with our hands closed and our arms shut. Of course, it can't be received. Whereas if we're to see in this different, broader, nuanced way, we can be asking, but with our hands open, and that we can receive something from the question that's being asked, rather than push it away simultaneously that we're asking for something.
It's such a brilliant phrase for describing the dilemma that us humans get into, which is most of the time we're barking up the wrong side of the right tree. I love it. We have to call this week's conversation something like that. Because that's right. So when I think it's connected to this thing we were talking about earlier about when we get contracted and get into efforting, that's usually a very good sign, I think, that we're trying to bring something about. In one way, on the one hand, we're trying to bring something about, and on the other hand, we're trying to make sure that we don't get too affected by it, or it doesn't get brought about in a way that's going to undo us. Mm-hmm. So like asking to be given something whilst keeping myself really tightly clasped so I can't receive just keeps the dynamic going, as opposed to, and it's, you know, I can feel it in myself when you said it, asking you, for example, for something and then making myself really open so I can receive whatever it is you have to say, what do you have to bring? It's kind of tender. I have to let myself open to the possibility that I might be changed by our interaction. So what a great way to say it, that when we're like this, like tightening ourselves up, we at the one time we want something to change, but we don't want it to change us too much.
Yeah.
And of course, that is barking up the wrong side of the right tree, which is how a lot of us go around a lot of our attempts to get through in life is that way.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's been very lovely to inquire, Justin, with you, and I can feel the gift seeping into the day. And this feeling of when I am asking for something from whatever part of me, in whatever distorted fashion, what can I do to open myself to actually receive the thing I asked for? And to really gentle myself into that opening, in that vulnerability of letting the clasping be looser. I'm really grateful. So thank you, Justin, for being here and knowing what this is about, and for us having the capacity to talk together and understand each other and work it out and feel into it together. Thank you.
Mm, you're so welcome.
And we will be back next week on Sunday at 9 o'clock if you're a live listener. And thank you for any comments that you make each week. It's really lovely to look at them afterwards and see any interactions that happen, and maybe there's things to respond to as well from Justin and I. So thank you so much for that. And we will be back next week with A Source Chosen by Justin. So thank you, everybody, and see you then.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.